Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Notre Dame fans, we are back. It is for round two, Ryan. This is Ryan Roberts. I'm Brian Driscoll. We are back for another recruiting show. And tonight, we are going to be talking about the pending decision by 2023 offensive lineman Sam Pendleton. Ryan is an offensive lineman from the state of North Carolina. We talked a little bit about him today in our show. He is going to be making a decision tonight at around 6:30. He announced that it was going to be on his Instagram feed. His Instagram feed is currently live, but he also said that his coach was making an announcement to the crowd saying it was going to be on CBS Sports. And so we are going to try and see if we can do the CBS Sports version, because that at least allows us to see hear the questions, where if we just did the Instagram, it would only be him talking. And so it would lack some context. So we are going to, assuming that is actually kind of how it all plays out, we're going to try to go with the CBS Sports. So I'm kind of looking at both here and kind of discussing both, and we will see kind of how this plays out. But he is at the podium at his high school, just kind of relaxing. He's got his mom and dad with him. Pretty good crowd there, Ryan. So let's really dive in first and just talk about this young man, right? This is a kid that Notre Dame is looking to get on the board. It's Notre Dame, Florida, Michigan, and NC State. Clemson, we thought, was going to be a much bigger player in this. We're not sure what happened there, but just kind of talk about, you talked to him about your four schools. Just talk to us about the four schools and, you know, where we think things stand as of right now.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame is obviously in a very good position going into this decision. And I think that it really obviously escalated quickly, because he didn't get his offer officially until the middle of March. And he made his...
It was like the 16th, right?
Yeah, it was like the 16th of March, right in the middle of the month. And he quickly made it to campus. Only a couple weeks later, the relationship between him and Harry Heaston, I think, is a big plus in this conversation right now. I think that the consistency across the board from his decision-making was he talked a lot about position coaches in that little exclusive, right? Like he talked about University of Michigan, obviously they're coming off of a season where they had the Joe Moore Award winning offensive line. So that's obviously
Sean Moore did a great job with that unit last year. No doubt.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so he mentioned Coach Moore, mentioned obviously Coach Heaston and the rest of the coaches at Notre Dame. And I think NC State is a team that is more of a proximity to home type of conversation. Obviously, I think Notre Dame and Michigan are more the fact that, like, hey, they've obviously developed offensive lines over the years, and Michigan's coming off of a great season as well in that type of conversation. The one that I can't really get much of a pulse on, Brian, I don't know if you've gotten a pulse on it throughout this, is Florida. I don't know exactly where the University of Florida came into this conversation, but either way, it has happened very quickly. Sam is a kid that has told me in the past he doesn't do any of the camp stuff. He doesn't do the Under Armour stuff. He doesn't do any of that. So he didn't get his first offer until like October of his of his junior season. So that's pretty late comparative to where a lot of kids get their offer. So it's been a fast process.
Go ahead, Ryan. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say it's been a fast process. He had a top school list even before Notre Dame came into the picture, and that quickly changed. And he told us in the past that Notre Dame was a team that he always wanted to hear from, a program he always wanted to hear from. So feel good about where Notre Dame is. Obviously, we're going to find that decision in a couple minutes, but definitely like their position.
Well, it's interesting, too, because how this whole thing played out is really intriguing, because when he Stan showed up, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past, but you know, for those who haven't been on the show before, you know, he was a kid that when he Stan got here in January, I mean, the process took a little bit. There were some things that kind of took his hiring a little bit longer than normal. But once it got done, it was like, okay, here's the board. Here's who we've offered. Here's who we're already recruiting. It's Okolola, it's Jagusa, it's Freeling, it's Absher, it's Austin Saraveld, it's those guys. And he went on the road and he saw those players. That was a smart decision, because you know who's on the board, go after those guys. Once they got off the road, that's when, in over the next month or so, that's when Coach Hiestand really started diving into the film of, okay, but who else is out there? Is there anybody else I like, maybe that the previous staff didn't like, or whatever the case may be? And this is, Sam Pendleton is one of those guys. And as you said, once the offer came, like that began, I mean, well, really it began leading up to the offer, but it really took off when the offer came, in regards to Notre Dame really took off and became a big time player for him. And that commitment, that relationship happened quickly, but it's not a thing where like they missed anybody. It's just, it was the process of, here's who's on the board. Let me go find out if there's somebody else that needs to be on it. Coach Hiestand clearly felt that Sam Pendleton needed to be on it and went after him and made a hard push. So I really like that, you know, that angle to it, because when Harry Hiestand sets his sights on a guy, you know, like, okay, yeah, this guy's, they're going to be tough to beat. This is a guy that they really want. And obviously Sam Pendleton was a guy that Coach Hiestand set his sights on. And as you said, the whole thing, I mean, we're barely a month and a week past the moment he got offered. You know, I mean, it happened pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, for sure. It happens extremely quickly. And I know you mentioned Coach Hiestand only, I think since he came, he's only offered three total 2023 kids to add to the board. Because you have Elijah Page, obviously, the Harris kid from IMG Academy, right? And then Pendleton. Right. So
did Harris get offered by Hiestand, or was he a guy that had already been offered?
Maybe my time's a little off on that one.
No. What happened was, is they started talking to him. Hiestand started talking to him, but I don't know if he was a guy that they necessarily targeted. But to your point, though, Ryan, even if, let's just assume that they did, because we're not quite sure of the timing of it, but let's assume that they did. The reality is they haven't made Harris a priority. He's a, if we miss out on so-and-so, we have him on the radar. That's not how they've treated Sam Pendleton.
Absolutely not.
Sam Pendleton, like, this is a guy that we want and that we're going after. That was their mentality. I think there's something else too, Ryan, which makes this one important, is, you know, this is a kid that isn't you're not fighting regional schools for him, to your point.
No.
I mean, Clemson's not in it. I don't know if that's partly them, partly him. I would imagine it's a little bit of both. Sometimes schools will bow out when they know they're not going to get a kid, because it's all of a sudden Clemson was the leader, and then all of a sudden coming out of the Notre Dame visit, Clemson's all of a sudden like, oh, we're not involved anymore. We'll see if maybe that was part of it or not. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this is a situation where Notre Dame is going against some national programs in this regard.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, you're talking about the Joe Moore Award winners are going after him. You know, mm-hmm. Florida's a program that's really hot on the recruiting trail right now. They're doing a really nice job of kind of coming up the East Coast, trying to get some linemen. They had Monroe Freeling on campus. And then you look at Miami offered him, Penn State offered him. It's got an impressive offer list. And I think the offer list is a lot more impressive than the recruiting rankings, which ties back to the original comment you made. He's a three-star kid by two services, 247 and on three. He is a top 250 guy from Rivals, so kudos to them. And then ESPN hasn't even ranked him yet. And a lot of that has to do with what you talked about. He's not a camp circuit kid. He's, here's my film. Either, like, you know, why does an offensive lineman need to go to a camp with no pads on? Right. Right? Unless all he cares about is the recruiting rankings. Right? Sam doesn't.
These rankings across the board for some of these offensive linemen have been bizarre, man. I mean, yeah. Elijah Page is a low guy on most of the rankings. Sullivan Absher at one point was like a three-star by a couple different of the platforms. So it's
been, one doesn't even have him in the top 250, but on three's got him in the top 100. And we've talked about this in some of our film breakdowns, which we're going to get back to next week. The rankings this year are just weird. And I don't know if it's because some services are just trying to get more into the whole, let's do this for click value, services or, you know, purposes or what, but you know, it's been strange. The whole process has been strange. So we'll hear them interview Sam, then they'll probably go to a commercial again and then come back and have him make his announcement. You all know how they do it, but they're just kind of talking about his game. So let's see if they're going to really pull him up yet. There we go.
Himself, Sam Pendleton, joining us on HQ to make it.
All right, can everybody hear it?
Sam, first and foremost, congratulations on all the hard work it's taken to get to this very moment. Before we put it on tape, give us an idea of what recruitment has been like for you.
Yeah, I would say recruitment has been, you know, it's been great throughout the whole process, but at some times it's been stressful. You know, sometimes you don't always see the stressful part of recruitment, but at the most of the time, it's really great.
I am sure you have experienced the full range of emotions, and we won't make you wait any longer. The wait finally over. The floor is yours. Big man, let the folks know where you'll be playing your college ball.
Yes, sir. I would like to say a few things before I make my commitment. First and foremost, I want to thank all of y'all for coming out tonight. It means a lot to me and my family that y'all made the trip. I would like to thank, first and foremost, my Lord and Jesus, Savior Christ. Thank you. I'm just so thankful that he's brought me here and give me the privilege to play football and pursue my dreams to play college football. And I'd also like to thank my parents for pouring into my dream with love and passion. I'd also like to thank all my high school coaches, especially Coach McGee, Coach Harbor, Coach Vogel, Coach Brenniger, along with my trainers, Corey Reich and Mike Turner. All these men have had such an influence on my life throughout the high school experience and have really just taken me in like one of their own, and I'll never thank them enough. Finally, I would like to thank all the coaches that have recruited me, especially the universities that have spent their time and effort to allow me to see what I need to see at their university. From academic advisors to chaplains, I can't thank those universities enough. And I also want to give a special thanks to Coach Legg and the rest of the staff up at Marshall. They took a chance on me before anyone else did, and I'll always have a special place in my heart for the herd. So with that being said, I will spend the next 4 to 5 years pursuing my degree and playing football at the University of Notre Dame.
There it is. Sam Pendleton is now a member of the Notre Dame 2023 recruiting class. Let's hear more from Sam
Pendleton
and his decision.
Congratulations. Much was made about the transition at the top of that program over the last 12 months. What about Coach Freeman's recruiting pitch made South Bend feel like the place for you, Sam?
Coach Eastek coming back is a really, really big attraction to recruits such as myself. He does such a great job developing guys, not just as men, but as athletes as well. And I'm just really excited to continue my process there.
Well, I got to tell you that Kelly Green looks good on the cap. Can you pinpoint the moment you said to yourself, it's the Irish?
Yeah, I kind of knew it was the Irish, you know, about 3 or 4 days after I got back from visit. You know, it's just one of those gut things that everyone else says, you know, when you know, you know. And, you know, just that feeling along with a lot of other things, such as academics, you know, don't get much better than Notre Dame. And just the football itself, you know, that's a global school. So that's how I knew.
Well, the icing on top is that it's an O-line factory. The Nelsons, the McGlinchies, the Bars, the Martins. How big of a factor was that segment room in your decision?
Yeah, especially those guys that come before me. That's really a really big thing that drew me there. Obviously, Coach Heastand had really proved himself with those guys, and I just feel like he has so much more to offer of a young recruit like himself.
Well, from here on out, it's all about what you do with the opportunity, and you right now have the opportunity to speak to your future fan base. Let the Irish faithful know what sort of ball players come into town.
Yes, sir. I would just say that just to expect physicality and hard work coming from me.
All right. Well, congratulations from all of us here at CBS. Go enjoy the moment, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I got to say, Ryan, I was very – that was probably my favorite commitment from the standpoint of it was short and sweet. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to go through three commercials because he's an offensive lineman, right? Yep. I mean, if that's a Harry, he's an offensive lineman. Hey, I'm going to make my decision. Here we go. We're going to get it over with. And bam, here's the reason why. Didn't play the games. Just put the hat on. Like, I loved Braylon James's commitment. There's been so many others that I've really enjoyed. But, like, that was the most – I shouldn't say my favorite – the most fitting, like, okay, yep, that's what a Harry Heastand offensive line is supposed to be about. But I want to speak to that, Ryan, because he said it right. I mean, it was so clear right then why it's Harry Heastand. It's the Harry Heastand effect. And the Notre Dame stuff kind of came, oh, yeah, and also it's a great school and all that. But it's like, why you pick Notre Dame? Harry Heastand. I mean, that's the reason why.
Yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense, right? If you want to be the best, why not go to a guy that has built a reputation as developing the best? I mean, they mentioned a few of the names in that little lead up, you know, the Mike McGlinchey's of the world, the Quentin Nelsons, the Ronnie Stanley's. I mean, the list is very easy to kind of pinpoint a lot of great players that have played there. So Sam Pendleton is hopefully the next in line. You know, he's a really talented football player. Obviously a guy that's been on the trail, you know, pretty not very long at all, but the offer list speaks to itself with a guy like Sam. And I mean, obviously you can hear it. And I've been able to speak to Sam and his mother in the past April. And I will say, they're a very religious and just very nice family, you know, mm-hmm. like they fit in so many different capacities. They're like, you can kind of just tell by listening to him a little bit. He's very non-assuming. He's very straight to the point. He's very business, but then he's also, you could just see that kind of the joy. Like when he was thanking people, I felt that he was very, very, you know, sincere, even threw in Marshall there, right? Like his first mm-hmm. offer, like that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
To be able to kind of come full circle there. So very happy for Sam and his family. They're really great people outside of what he can do on the football field.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, he kind of, so he committed to Notre Dame. I don't remember. I forget which day it was, but it was several days ago. This is not a surprise that he made this decision tonight. And really it came up. I mean, like he said it accurately. Sometimes kids will say, oh, you know, I did this. But we know this real story was actually that, We knew he loved Notre Dame and the visit was impactful, but we also knew that he had the Florida visit coming up and that he wanted to try to take a step back. And that's what I really liked about it. And when he did make his decision, you felt good about it, Ryan, because it was one where he didn't make it emotionally during the weekend, although there was some thought that he might. Like that's how well the visit went, is that, boy, he may be doing this here real soon, but he wanted to take a step back and make sure that he thought it through. And again, just a great fit for what Notre Dame looks for when it comes to recruiting offensive linemen.
Yeah, and after the visit, I remember speaking to his mother, and his mother kind of made a comment like, you know, Sam isn't 100% sure when he's going to make the decision for what college he wants to go to, but he's just going to pray and he's going to let it kind of work itself out. And you heard him talk about that, right? Like he knew when he knew, and it's a hard thing to quantify, but when you know you're making the right decision, it just kind of clicks. It's not something that's as quantifiable as something. So again, very happy for him, very happy for his family. I know that they were just genuinely enjoying that moment. And I mean, like you said, there's a couple precursors, I think, that Notre Dame fans that are in here are pretty smart about, right? Like when Clemson wasn't in his top four, I'm like, you know, because we've been kind of talking about the Clemson-Notre Dame battle a little bit. And the fact that his last visit before he had made his announcement was with Notre Dame, like those things kind of align to, you know, things are heading in the right direction, obviously.
I got to bring up something else, Ryan, and we have to talk about this because it's the petty side of me, to be completely honest with you. Obviously, this is a great pickup. We're going to dive into the film here real quickly, but there's a petty side of me that I think needs to be addressed, and that is the fact that this is a kid that Michigan felt they were in a really good position with for a long time. Sam visited Michigan in October. And actually, was it in October, November? He visited Michigan in November I believe, for the Ohio State game. He visited in early March, several days before Notre Dame offered him. Visited campus twice before Notre Dame offered the kid a scholarship. They just won the Joe Moore Award. They just went to the Cotton Bowl playoff. And as soon as Notre Dame got involved, it was like, uh-oh. And I just think it speaks volumes to, number one, Harry Hiestand. But number two, as we said earlier, it's not just Harry Hiestand. It's Chad Bowden. It's Tommy Reese. It's Marcus Freeman. It's the whole operation. And Harry Hiestand was bringing in studs the last time just basically by himself. Now it's like, it's not just him. It's going to make them very hard to beat on the recruiting trail at a position like this. And we're seeing it over and over again. And there, the utter dominance over Michigan in this recruiting class is really surprising. I mean, it isn't. It just speaks to how dumb the way that Jim Harbaugh handled the offseason was, but also just the momentum that Marcus Freeman and his staff have built and the type of staff that Marcus Freeman put together. That's arguably the most important job requirement for a successful coach, is to have a great staff. And so far, I mean, coaching wise and recruiting wise, Ryan, one of the questions we had, we didn't get to in the earlier show, was, is there anybody that, you know, maybe isn't doing as good of a job as you thought? And there's been great recruiters on the staff for years, but it was always like one great one, two or three really good ones. And then it's like, but there's nobody on the staff right now that I can look at and say, yeah, they're not doing a great job. I mean, we could look at corner with Mike Mickens, but it's like, yeah, but they're coming off the best 2-year stretch that they've had in a long time, right? Like, they chose to move on from a kid in this class, and there's all types of different things. And you're like, man, they're recruiting at least really well everywhere. Now it's are you recruiting at an elite level everywhere? Not yet, but they're getting there. But just the utter dominance over Michigan, a year in which they're coming off a playoff berth, is and won the Joe Moore Award, is, it's surprising to me how dominant it's been, to be completely honest with you.
No, I mean, Notre Dame's obviously had some sporadic victories throughout the stretch, just in general, and in Michigan. But I agree with you. It's the fact that Michigan has momentum. You know, in theory, they have momentum on the field. They just are coming off a playoff berth. They just had the Joe Moore award-winning offensive line. So, in theory, you would think that they would be a big contender for Sam Pendleton, which they were. I mean, they were in the top four. So, like, yeah, they did a solid enough job in the recruitment. But the fact that they were able to beat this team that's coming off of that success is, I think it speaks paramount to not only the caliber of recruiting that Notre Dame is doing, but also the fact that Jim Harbaugh has not done that program any favors with kind of that offseason flirting with the NFL. Like, that did not do anybody any favors. Like, let's just be honest about that. So, great win for Notre Dame. Great win to always beat Michigan. I mean, at the end of the day, that's two big wins today on top of grabbing a very talented offensive lineman, to say the least.
Two victories over Michigan in a 3-day period. It's not a bad period.
It's a good point.
At all, Ryan.
It's not a good point. Period. Yeah. They just stole another Michigan defensive lineman. I forgot about that. Yep.
So let's dive into the film, Ryan. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what we like to do, right? Like, that's our bread and butter. So let's dive into some film and share with the people why we think this is such a big pickup for Notre Dame. Yep. So we are going to start with some film analysis of Sam Pendleton. He's listed between 6'5", 290, 6'4", 305. He plays tackle in high school. Notre Dame is recruiting him to be an interior player. So we'll let a few of these go through. I know people are like, can you just let him run through first? We'll try, but you have to understand, y'all, I'm a coach. We don't let plays just go through. We rewind. We're seeing something here that we saw from the kids, that the tackles we broke down the other day, which is a nastiness, right? A physicality. He doesn't look 6'5", 305 to me, 6'4", 305 to me on film. No. This is also from last fall. He looks like he's filled out some. He looks like he's a pretty big kid in the upper body. So we'll just have to see him up close and personal. But you can see on here, Ryan, he's definitely interior player. He's definitely an inside guy.
He's a vertical player, right? Like you want him to fire out of his stance to get up to the first and second level. Like that's this type of dude. The one thing I love, Brian, though, and you saw it especially in that pass block early rep, dude has some powerful punch, man. When he lands it, he moves people. Like even on this one on the second level, you see just that subtle pop in those hands. That kid gets stalled and his feet stop.
Yeah. The thing I like too, Ryan, and this is one of those plays where I feel like this kind of shows why I like him at guard. Like you're just not going to reach an edge in college that way, but you can get to a three technique. But the thing you see from him here, the thing you see from him in a lot of other plays is exactly what we've talked about with these other linemen that Notre Dame really likes. He drives his feet through contact. There's no stopping at the point of contact for him. And that's it can be taught, but if you have it already, it's much better for any offensive line coach.
Yeah, and I love the effort he blocks with, and that kind of goes to your point about, you know, for running your feet on contact and finishing plays. Like you can see that he has definitely a little bit of a nasty demeanor to him, but more than anything, I think pretty technically sound for his age, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. I think at times I'd like to see him maybe when he's working for width, he'll lift a little bit, but for the most part, I think he plays with a good base, plays with a good pad level, comes off the line with physicality. This is a nice pass set here. Again, especially if you're talking about a guy that's going to be a guard, you know, you see the base here, Ryan. He keeps his butt low out of his stance, right? Nice base. He's on the balls of his feet, right? You know, he's not flat footed. He's not leaning back. He's not too forward. You see the length there, though, right? That's the thing I did notice about him. He seems to have pretty good length for an in. My projection of him being inside has zero to do with him not being long enough. That is the one thing I will say about him, Ryan. I'm not sure if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a length issue as much as I just the foot quickness is good. I don't think it's great. And I mean, more than anything, like I just think he plays like a guard. And I think his body type is more of a guard, in my opinion. Like he's got kind of that those low hips, a little bit of a wide waist. Like he just looks like a guard to me.
Right. And we've talked about that. Sometimes a guy being an interior player is more about can be as much about his disposition as anything else. And that's true of Sam. Brings his feet a little bit together too much here at the point of contact. But again, you see him driving through the point of contact, really nice feet. I think he's got good agility. He's not an in space guy, right? That's the thing for me. His athleticism projects well inside. Again, you see him getting to the second level quickly. At times he'll get a little bit too narrow, a little bit too high, but man, I really like this kid's punch. He's got one of the best set of hands of any lineman in the country, in my opinion, just as far as just raw power. There's some other things that, you know, obviously, you know, get a little quicker and, you know, continue to do this, that, and the other thing, but the power in his hands is something that really stands out to me. And I think you see this, that here too, Ryan, is his combination of length, hand power, and then, you know, good foot agility, like not elite, but good, is also why I could really see him potentially being a center as well. Like he fits in at all three interior spots for me. And
yeah,
again, I don't know if he can snap. That's a teachable skill though, right? Snapping is a teachable skill. And this is what I like, but look at him driving his feet through contact here. I mean, this is really where you want to be, folks. Like, and he's power stepping, right, Ryan? Like, he's not just like running; he's power stepping. You see him with his feet out, like you said. I think it's a good observation, Ryan. He seems like a really well coached kid.
Yeah. Now he's right? you can tell the guys that really have the kind of emphasis on technique. You can see how he drives that post foot into the ground. He gets good power. Gets good power at the point of attack. You can just see a good base pretty consistently throughout. And I agree with you. I think that his biggest strengths for me is I think he's a great zone blocker because I think that things that he does well, he's got that punch at the point of attack. I think when you're running duo and, you know, just kind of doing some combos the second level, he's going to get some good movement up front. But then also his foot quickness is plus inside where he's able to work to the second level. So I think he could play center. I think he has enough length to play left guard. I think he has a disposition to also play right guard on the front side of runs. Like I think he'd know all of the above.
I think what you've seen from a couple of these clips too, and I'm going to try to find another one. We just saw it. I may have to go back to the other one, but you can noticeably see him like driving his hips in the run game. Like you can noticeably see it, and you don't always see that. Like this isn't a great example because it's kind of far away. I'm going to try to find one, But what you'll see is you'll kind of see when a guy engages, he's driving his hips, is you'll see kind of like his stomach area kind of go in a little bit, right? And his back kind of goes out. That's that where that hip drive is coming from. And you'll see that from Sam in these clips, Ryan.
I guarantee that, because I agree. I think there's a lot of strength through the lower body and the hips. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hip snap. I would guarantee that this kid is a good power cleaner, probably a good squatter, probably mm-hmm. just probably a good weight room kid in general. You can just see yeah. that there's lower body power there.
When you saw the picture that we have on the front page too, like he's got pretty big arms for a high school junior. He's not like a big – that's the thing that I was surprised by, because he does – like on this film, you can't really tell what kind of body he has. And then when you see the photos of him from the Notre Dame visit, you're like, he's just a big kid. Like he's not like fat. You know what I mean?
He's like a farm boy, man. Yeah. Like that's what he got.
Yeah. He's a country boy. That's a good way of putting it. Like he's just a big kid.
Yep.
So lot to like about this young man. And again, we're watching him play tackle. I think his game's going to go to an even greater level when he moves inside. I just think that's where his game is ideally suited. I like this is good right here.
Yeah. I think one thing that you said, Brian, like I think at worst, even if he never hits his ceiling, this is a kid that can back up three different positions inside. Right. Like this is a depth piece at worst, in my opinion.
This play I like right here, because this shows that fundamental, you know, sound play. He's got to help secure his outside gap. So he does that with his outside arm, but he stays square and he's got his eyes inside to protect the B gap. He sees that guy go outside. He steps down, takes on a pretty good sized kid here, and just opens up a gaping hole. It's a really, really good football play right there.
Yeah, and some people are making a observation that number 74 on their team's a big kid too. I think I might need to look him up.
He's not the only good offensive. I mean, he's their best offensive lineman by far. But they've got a couple kids. You're like, okay, that kid's not bad. Okay, that kid's not bad.
They got some size up front.
They're a well coached football. They're a well coached. Well-coached group of kids, but I do think his technique, from what I can tell, and I don't know the age groups of those other kids, that might factor into it as well, is the most sound of all of them.
I agree.
Somebody said Spencer Webb, 6'5", 315 pounds.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't know if that's who that is, but that's what Greekanese 206 just put into the chat.
Greekanese,
That's a big boy. This recovery right here, because this isn't like necessarily a great clip. Like he kind of gets off balance a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he recovers, keeps his base, gets his butt back down, and you know, gets back in position where he's ready to get back in the fight.
Well, and that's when we did our offensive tackle kind of film breakdown, Brian. That's the type of play I was talking about when I'm talking about the flexibility, right? Like there's going to be plays where guys are going to kind of get knocked off their track a little bit. Their body's going to get kind of contorted in different ways. The ability to get your body back in position is a really underrated kind of element of playing offensive line. And although I usually kind of parlay that with playing offensive tackle more than guard, it's still really nice to see that he has some type of flexibility to kind of get out of trouble at times.
Yeah. So that's Sam Pendleton's film, folks. So that is Notre Dame's latest commitment. Obviously Sam joining the class means Notre Dame is back to number one in the 247 composite rankings. They're still number two in arrivals because Texas A&M now has 19 commitments in their class, which is, it's a really good class for Texas A&M, but like their average star ranking is like in the mid threes, I think.
Texas Tech.
Huge class for Texas Tech. They're putting together a nice class for them. We'll see if they can hang on to them, but it's mostly three-star kids, but it's a good class. So Notre Dame has the best class in the country right now, and this gives them commitment number 10. Yep. He is now the fourth offensive lineman to commit, or fourth offensive player to commit to Notre Dame, joining running back Cedric Irvin, tight end Cooper Flanagan, wide receiver Braylon James, right? So fourth public commitment on the offensive side of the ball. And as we said, numero uno along the offensive line. So let's talk about the need fit here, Ryan. I think this kid fits a need in three areas. Number one, obviously Notre Dame wants to get four offensive linemen in this class. This is step one to that. Number two, I think Notre Dame clearly wanted to add more physicality to the offensive line. Check, right? And then number three, I think that they wanted at least one guy that was going to be a pure interior player that can, as you said, can play those spots. Because that's the thing, is they've signed a lot of interior guys the last couple of years. So this is more of a tackle class that they're looking for. But there is at least one guy that you want to say, hey, look, we like him inside. He brings the agility, the power and all this. And I think he's that guy. Like if they miss on Austin Sereveld, who's another guy that Notre Dame likes and wants in this class, another interior guy, they're okay because they don't have a need for numbers from an interior player standpoint. Now that this is it, this is one, because they're going to recruit tackles, Sullivan Abshire, Charles Jagusa, guys like that, Ty Chan in last year's class that could potentially move inside as well. So they, you know, Harry Hiestand doesn't like to recruit nearly as many pure interior guys as Jeff Quinn seemed to like to recruit. And so I think that's a big thing too, but you've now met your need there as well. And as we talked about in the show earlier today, being able to get into the, you know, that Carolinas region for an offensive lineman, sort of that, you know, we can call it mid-Atlantic ACC region, whatever the case may be. They haven't gotten an offensive lineman from that area since 2014 with Sam Mustipher. And they haven't got a kid from an offensive lineman from North Carolina since 2012 with Mark Harrell. So getting back into that state is another positive that comes from the commitment of Sam Pendleton.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be several Carolina battles this season for offensive line specifically, right? We talk about Monroe Freeling. We talk about Sullivan Abshire, of course, out of North Carolina, like Pendleton is. And it's very nice, I mean, to say the least, man, because like you said, that's a region that is starting to more and more produce offensive linemen, especially in this cycle. So this is kind of like the Massachusetts of the South a little bit, right? Like we say, Notre Dame has made a big impact in the state of Massachusetts, and it could continue to grow. Carolinas are the same from the offensive line, offensive lineman perspective. So it's a good start to it for sure.
So let's talk about what's next, the offensive line, before we dive into questions. Obviously, not only is this not the last commitment that Notre Dame wants to land on the offensive line, they're hoping that this isn't the last commitment from the state of North Carolina on the offensive line. So let's first talk about we'll call it the big three that's left on the board when it comes to tackles. I think that's where we can start, and then we'll talk about Austin Sereveld next. Obviously, this past weekend, Ryan, and you know, we'll talk about this for those who weren't on the show earlier today, two of the big three, and we're talking about Sullivan Abshire, Monroe Freeling, Charles Jagusa, which in no particular order. Okay, so we're just kind of in order of when we think guys will make decisions is probably where that came from. And they had two of those three guys on campus this weekend, obviously Sullivan Abshire and Monroe Freeling. So just a quick update for some of the people that maybe weren't on the show earlier today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so like Brian said, Sullivan Abshire out of North Carolina, Monroe Freeling out of South Carolina, spent their second visit actually to Notre Dame. They were there for the January 29th junior day originally. And when I talked to Monroe, he basically said that him and Sullivan were hanging out the whole time. And we went into the visit. I didn't feel great about where Sullivan Abshire was as far as on Notre Dame in regards to Notre Dame. I felt better about where Monroe Freeling was. We leave the visit both feeling very good about the situation for Notre Dame. I would say that they're the leader for both players involved right now. Now, obviously, they need to close on those guys. But, I mean, when we were talking about the offensive tackle class for this year, Monroe Freeling, for me, is a top 50 player in this class, and I think that he has incredible traits to play left tackle. Now, Sullivan Abshire, on the other hand, really physical player, great pad level. I think he could play either a tackle or be a really good guard inside. So he gives you some flexibility, especially if you get a guy like Charles Jagusa, who also has a similar profile where could play tackle, could be dominant inside. You let two of those players in case you get both of them. I think then you got to have some flexibility to where guys fit. But as far as this past weekend, they really knocked it out of the park with both Freeling and Abshire. I feel like they are in great spot with all of the Carolina guys, obviously now with this commitment with Pendleton.
So here's a question I'm going to ask you, Ryan, that we didn't really address specifically earlier in the show we did this afternoon when we covered recruiting. And if you're not comfortable answering it, that's fine. You don't have to. If you had to go right now, what would you say is your order of confidence in Notre Dame landing that group of three? And then we'll talk about Austin Sereveld next.
Jagusa included with the two that just visited?
Yeah, the big three of the big three that we talked about. So Sullivan, Abshire, Charles, and Monroe Frilling. So not timing of the of it, not what your thoughts are and who's going to do it first, but just or you don't have to give a certain degree either, but what is your level of confidence, most confident next, and then least confident in that group?
Yeah, I would say number one for me, and I think this is going to be a little bit of a controversial take for a second. I think it's Monroe Frilling for me. And I know that that's probably not the same for you, but I have just felt so much better about where Notre Dame's been with Monroe Frilling recently over the last couple months. And I think that leaving the visit, I feel about as good as I ever have with where they sit with him. Number two, I would actually go Sullivan Abshire now, which is a really weird one for me because I was not feeling great about it going into the visit. But leaving that visit, I think that they're in a great spot. And then I would say I feel still good about Jagusa, but the thing about him is he's leaving himself open, kind of seeming to extend his decision-making to when he's going to make the announcement. I still think Notre Dame's probably in the lead for him, but if he is delaying it a little bit longer, then you're giving other schools an opportunity to maybe get back into the conversation and back into the fray. So I think that would be for me. Yeah, I would say Frilling, Abshire, then Jagusa in that order.
It's interesting you say that, Ryan, because that's kind of where my list comes from, is the guy that I'm right now most confident in is Sullivan Abshire, based on all the intel we're getting. That's my number one. And the reason I say that is because he's the only one on this list that we know for a fact as of today doesn't have any visits planned to other schools. As far as I know, I don't believe he's got a bunch of officials set up. I believe he's pretty much in decision-making mode. And based on where Notre Dame stands, they're good. Jagusa and Frilling are guys that are kind of out. And for me, I'd go Jagusa number two and Frilling three. I feel good about all of them. The reason I would go that direction is because I still get a little nervous with a Southern kid if a Bama or a Georgia decides to turn up the heat. Always leaves me a little nervous if he's a ways away. If I thought, and I again, we're not ranking him based off of the timing of it, but if I thought he was going to decide in May, and I just knew he was going to decide in May, I might move Frilling up more. But because he's, as of now, he's a summer, you know, June, July type of decision-making mode, I get a little bit more nervous than I would if those schools were going after Charles Jagusa, who's in Notre Dame's backyard, as opposed to him being in their backyard. But that's more of a fear out of facts that aren't there right now. You know, so based on where they are, I think we could make a case for all three of those guys being in the top spot, to be honest with you. I mean,
yeah,
I think a strong case could be made that Jagusa's number one on the list. But yeah, they're in a good place. Could.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could definitely make that conversation. I think the biggest thing for him, again, is while we don't know, you know, exactly what the visit schedule is going to look like, because, I mean, Charles just seems like a kid that doesn't really care about the recruiting process too much. You know, it seems like he doesn't really, you know, kind of he's trying to figure out the steps as he goes. But, I mean, just again, man, with the – so for me, I think Sullivan Abshire's timeline is going to end pretty soon here, right? Like, I think that he's going to make a decision probably within the next month or so. Monroe Frilling is a guy, Brian, that's told us he's going to wait until his senior year. I have the feeling, though, that could get pushed up.
I'd be shocked if he's not committed before the season starts.
Right, right. So I feel like his timeline is going to get – the player that I talked to with him, he seems like a kid that might push it up a little bit. Jagusa just doesn't seem like be in any type of hurry. So he just makes me a little nervous to a degree because, again, if the decision were today, I think it's Notre Dame. But the fact of the matter is, the longer you keep the recruiting up and he's the leader, that gives other programs an opportunity, right? Like, you leave yourself susceptible to potentially getting poached, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Right. So there's a guy that we'll talk about now real quick before we get to that. We do have a super chat here from a couple super chats here real quick from Kay Grant. Kay Grant, thank you very much for the super chat, my man. Appreciate you. Spark 5219. Also, thank you, sir. Thanks for the bonus coverage. IB, best Notre Dame coverage, hands down. We agree, but we're biased. So it's nice hearing that from you. We appreciate that very, 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 very much as well. So let's get into another offensive lineman that's on the board that Notre Dame definitely wants before we talk about another offensive lineman that everyone always asks about when we talk about offensive linemen and where things stand, because you have been trying to contact him. But Austin Sarveld is another guy on the board from Lakota West or Lakota East. There's two of those. I forget which one he is from. I think it's Lakota East.
I think it's East.
And so he's another guy that's been on campus now three times this winter, basically. And he was on campus in, I believe, January, and then he made two visits in April. He visited the first Saturday of April for a Notre Dame practice, and then he was on campus, we believe, this past weekend as well for another visit, we think. And we haven't had a chance to get a hold of him yet to confirm that, but he was expected to come. Where do you – Austin is also a reminder – he recently announced a few weeks ago that he is a Final Three of Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Alabama. Most believe this is an Ohio State-Notre Dame battle. And depending on whether Ohio State or Notre Dame leads, depend on who you ask and what day you ask it, basically. So what's the latest that you know of about him? Because he's also the other pure interior guy. Like, we think Abshur and Jagusa are guys that could play tackle. Saravelle's the other pure interior player on the board for Notre Dame. So what's the latest with Austin Sarveld, in your opinion?
Yeah, he's a tough one to read sometimes. You know, I feel like right now it's a coin flip. Like you said, on one day you can convince me it's Ohio State. On the other day, you can convince me it's Notre Dame. I definitely think that is the top two, though. Like Alabama, I think it's just a throw-in because it's Alabama, to be honest. Like, that is, he's an Ohio kid. He likes the Buckeyes. The Buckeyes have been on him for a long time now. Notre Dame likes him, though, and they'll take him. There's no doubt about it. So I think that is definitely a one-to-one to Ohio State versus Notre Dame. They have the close in it, but I think you feel solidly where Notre Dame is, but it's definitely not a foregone conclusion that they are the leader for Austin Sarveld right now.
So when you – obviously there's another two guys on the board. Elijah Page we won't chat a lot about today because his recruitment is kind of – it's a down-the-road one kind of deal. Every time we do something about the offensive line, one of the first questions that gets asked is, what about Samson Okunlola? So let's address it, and we'll address it again. And there's, Ryan, it's same as before, correct?
Every time I talk to Samson, we talk for a little bit. I ask him, hey, have you set up anything with Notre Dame yet? And the answer is very consistent. Not yet. Okay. Meanwhile, you know, again, I no fault to the kid. It's his decision ultimately, but – he made a Midwest trip. He went to Michigan. He went to Michigan State. Didn't stop by Notre Dame, right? So, like, he's active on the visits. He's not just stagnant at home, just kind of weighing his options until the officials.
He hasn't engaged the recruiting process at all. I mean, exactly. He's been on plenty of trips. It's just he hasn't felt the need to make one to Ohio, to Notre Dame yet.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember the first time I talked to him. Obviously, his film's fantastic, by the way. Like, let's just get that out of the way. He's a really good football player. First five-star recruit out of Massachusetts in the 247 sports era. I mean, so he's an excellent football player. There's no doubt. The first time I talked to him,
that's
though.
That's legit ranking. That's not like, oh, he went to a camp. No, that dude is a five-star player. I would say, and some people take Caden Proctor. For me, he's my number one offensive lineman that I've seen so far in this class.
Yeah, no, and it's very fair. I mean, Okunlola is a very good football player. The first time I talked to him, though, he didn't seem to really know much about Harry Hiestand, and he didn't really seem to know much about the Notre Dame program in general. And honestly, he just kind of has a little bit of a nonchalant attitude, right? So, like, I don't know how much he wants to actually know about the Notre Dame program, to be very honest. And he hasn't taken the initiative to set up a trip. So until he sets up that visit, I'm not going to feel good about it. Like, that's just the point blank period to it. It's a non-issue right now. Like, it's not tangible at all to even expect them to be in the race with him right now.
So Ryan, let's go through here and grab some questions. I know there's a lot of them. We gotta find some. We've got some starred. Let's jump up here. We got a super chat from Tommy Guns. Says, To start a petition to officially change the name, because they say Kelly Green to Irish Green or Freeman Green. Y'all know that doesn't have anything to do with Brian Kelly, right? Like, I just want to make sure that Tommy knows.
Everything has something to do with Brian Kelly. You don't know.
No, it doesn't. About. It was named Kelly Green before Brian Kelly was hired to be the head.
Proof or it didn't happen, Brian. Proof.
I can do that. I can do that. Oh, that's not a problem. Jim Halloran, Brian and Ryan, how much did the culture of the O-line room make a difference?
I mean, it's huge. It's absolutely huge, Jim. Because offensive linemen, you saw if you were in the chat earlier when Pendleton made his commitment. Most offensive linemen don't love the recruiting process, right? Like, they're not the guys that are flashy and in front of the camera a ton. They're very non-assuming and they're very business oriented, right? So they understand how important the other four guys in their offensive line is to them, right? Like, it's a machine. They are a part of the machine. That's why most offensive linemen don't get a lot of credit for how good they are. Like, Trent Williams just had one of the best seasons I've ever seen from a left tackle in the NFL. And yeah, he makes all pro, like, he's getting those awards, but like, you barely hear his name throughout the season just because it's a non-glamorous position. So I think that the big thing and why I took away from the visit was so great from a Freeling-Abster perspective is the fact that they're buddies and they're hanging out, because that's an offensive line thing and that's a culture thing and that's a family-oriented type of position. You need to be tight with the guys around you.
Let's get to the next question from Zach Nichols. Thanks, Zach. Question all. Let's assume that Notre Dame finishes with Charles Jagusa, Monroe Freeling, Sullivan Abshire, and Austin Sereveld. And that would include, obviously, want to add Sam Pendleton to that. How would the 2023 then compare with 2022? We talk about the Harry Heisen effect, but how much better would this class be as far as with regards to the IP prospect rankings? I'm going to say that. I'm going to speak on this first, Ryan, and then give your opinion. Number one, this would be a significantly better class. And I liked last year's class. The thing I liked about last year's class is it was five good football players. The problem that I had is outside of Billy Shrouth, none of them were definite to me top 100 players. I didn't have Ty Chan in the top 100. I did give Emil Wagner a five-star upside grade, but he's a guy that, you know, we've had questions about. Ashton Craig's another projectable type of kid, you know, needs time, needs to develop. Joey Tanon is a top 150 kid. I liked him. Like, they're all five good football players. But this class would have, I mean, if we're going to rank all 10 of them, if they get that group right there, there's no question that the first two are from this class. Y'all know I love Billy Shrouth. He was a top 100 player for me. But he ranks behind Charles Jagusa and Monroe Freeling right now. And I'd have to compare his ranking to some of the other guys. I would have Billy Shrouth ahead of the other guys. But after him, I mean, looking at that group, you can make a case that Abshire would be next before anybody else in the 2022 class. I mean, you can make a case that at least three of the top five players from that two group combined would be guys from this class if they finish with the group that you talked about. So I think that's the thing for me, Zach, is this class, if they got the four you mentioned plus Pendleton, would provide every bit as good a depth as last year's class. And last year's class was one of Notre Dame's better line classes in several years because of the quality of the depth. And like, if you were to compare last year's class to the 2021 group, the reason I like last year's class sort of overall, because from a ranking standpoint, you know, you had the two highly ranked guys in 2021, but then the bottom two were like, there's a big drop off there. Now, obviously, Joe Walt has emerged, and he's tapped in his potential, but he was a projectable guy when they got him. Whereas last year's class, you had, to me, you know, five really good players. And the last two of last year, to me, graded out much higher than Pat Coogan and Caleb Johnson from the year before. And so, to me, depth of talent in the offensive line matters. And the reason I liked last year's class, Ryan, also, and I should preface this, because how I graded that five would be different if Notre Dame signed a bunch of receivers and there was no top 100 guys. And when I mean top 100, I'm talking my grade. I don't care what other guys are ranked. I'm talking about my grade. It's because I don't think you need a star along the offensive line to have a great line. And I think Michigan's line last year is a great example of that. There's no guy that I look at, I'm like, that guy is a future first-round pick. Maybe somebody turns into that, but I didn't see it. They were just a really good unit. And we've seen that from Iowa for a lot of years. You know, yeah, and they've had their Tristan Wirfs and the kid that they have at center this year. But so many years, Iowa doesn't necessarily really have a great individual lineman. And some of the guys that got drafted high were, you found out later, were products of the system.
Robert Gallery.
So than great players. I'm a believer that if you give me five just good football players, I'm going to have a really good offensive line if I have a good offensive line coach.
Yeah.
And so that's why I value last year's line. If I could choose, however, I'd rather have five with all five being really good, but two of them being elite. I'd rather have that, or at least elite upside. And so to me, that's what I prefer. And so give me a 2022 offensive line with five good players as compared to past years where, you know, Blake Fisher and, you know, Joe Ault or Blake Fisher and Rocco Spindler, depending on how you want to look at it, are going to be better than anybody you have. But, you know, we're going to beat you because we're going to take advantage of your 4 and 5 because we're going to whoop you there. Whereas last year's group, if they all pan out, there is no 4 or 5 you can take advantage of. And that's what this group would be the same as well. So.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's fair. That's okay. Fair. No, that's a lot of great context. I think for me, Brian, because I didn't grade the 2022 class, obviously. Like, I watched Emil Wagner. I watched Billy Shrouth because, you know, I was a Notre Dame fan, obviously, right? So I wanted to watch the guys that were signing with them. I will say this, just from my perspective, and I would love if you could disagree with this, I would love to hear it, honestly, because I think it's a great conversation. I think if you get that 2023 group that's mentioned there, Jagusa, Freeling, Absher, and Sierveld, I think that that fits a lot better from a cross-the-board perspective, from a practicality perspective, from a playing perspective than last year's group, because Emil Wagner is a little bit of a project. If he turns out, he could definitely be a really good offensive tackle. There's no doubt. But if he does not, then who's the offensive tackle in that group? Is it Ty Chan? Is it not?
Well, let's just go with the assumption that everybody pans out.
Sure.
Okay? And Emil does fill out. The reality is he's the only guy that I can definitely say he's a tackle.
Right.
To your point. I don't even think we need to talk about if he doesn't pan. If he doesn't pan out, that class is in trouble. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem is Ty Chan, to me, was a tackle when they got him, but he outgrew it. And I think as he got bigger, his feet got a little slower, and he didn't look like a tackle to me in this type of offense, in my opinion. Other offenses, he could play tackle. Like Bama's offense, he could play tackle because that's more of a power football thing where it's a gap scheme and stuff like that. This requires a little bit more – it's not better or worse. It's just different. Right. Notre Dame is more of a zone team, which requires a little bit more athleticism on the edge. And so I don't see Ty Chan as a tackle. I don't see Joey Tonona could play tackle, but he's better inside, in my opinion, than he is outside. And so to your point, Ryan, I would much rather be in a situation where I got to move somebody outside inside than moving someone inside outside, to your point.
Yeah.
And so as a group of five, fitting. So again, beyond the recruiting rankings aspect and the talent aspect, you got to fit those five guys together. So if you could only play one group of five, I agree with you that this year's group would be better because there's more athleticism. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot more size in this group. I mean, of that group right there, Monroe Freeling would be the smallest guy at 6'7", 285.
Yeah.
You know, Jagusa's 290, 295. Sarahveld's 315. Pendleton's between 290 to 305, depending on how he's listed. Absher's listed at 275. He's not 275. Like, he's at least 280, 285. Whereas you look at last year's group, and, you know, Ashton Craig is 260, 270. You know, Billy Shrouth is 280, 285. You know, Emil Wagner's 260, 265. And that's even questionable, in my personal opinion.
Yep.
So it brings and it's a lot. It's a longer group and a little bit more athletic group, but it's certainly more powerful group as well. So I do think it's a better class. That's not to disparage last year's class at all. I thought last year's offensive line class was one of the five best in the country. It was a really good offensive line class. I mean, we don't know if it's going to pan out, but that you never know that, right? Like he stands first line class. You're like, man, this is a phenomenal class. It's Steve Elmer and Colin McGovern was highly ranked, and John Montalus was the top 100 guy, and Hunter Bibben was the highest ranked guy of the group, and then Mike McGlinchey. You know, some of those guys didn't pan out. It happens. Hunter Bibben's doing great things for Notre Dame now, but he didn't pan out to be the top 100 lineman that he was ranked to be for whatever reason. John Montalus didn't pan out. Colin McGovern had some issues, you know, kind of adjusting to playing college football. So you never really know. Right. The 2017 group did pan out. right? I mean, it as a by and large, I mean, Dylan Gibbons didn't really do a lot at Notre Dame, but he's turned into an ACC starter at Florida State. And the reason he left is because first of all, I still say, you chose Caden Madden over that guy?
That's crazy, man. Because he ended up playing pretty well for Florida State last year. He's on Caden Madden. He's on some draft radars for next year. Yeah. Dylan Gibbons isn't a bad little player.
And he wanted to be at Notre Dame. It's not like Dylan left because he was salty. I mean, he knew, like, you're not going to give me a shot. I mean, you know, that was just the reality of it. I mean, his brother went to law school here. The family loves Notre Dame. They had a home in the area. He didn't leave because he didn't like Notre Dame or any other reasons. So that's a different story for a different day. But, you know, you think about that whole group of four, Hainsey, Banks, Lug, and Dylan Gibbons all turned into Power Five, multi-year Power Five starters because Dylan's back. He's going to be a starter for Florida State again this year.
And they all might get drafted too when they end up going out.
Dylan, so, I'd probably have he'd be the bigger question mark if Lug is healthy this year. But still, I mean, we're talking about it. And the other two were second and a third round pick. So it's we don't know how it's going to pan out. We're just going off of recruiting rankings. And that's why it makes the 2021 discussion challenging, because when I talk about the 2021 class, I got to talk about what they were as recruits, right? Because we can't compare high school recruits that have never played college football to Joe Alt, who's panned out and been a little better than we expect, or a little better earlier than we expected. I mean, I gave him a 4.5 star upside grade, which may have actually undersold it if he continues to develop. But for now, I'm comfortable with that upside grade. I thought it'd take longer. Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, so that's the difficulty. People say, well, you know, how can you compare this class to that class when this class had so-and-so? I'm like, well, nobody thought Jeff Samardzija was going to be a great recruit when he signed with Notre Dame. Like, nobody thought Tyler Eifert was going to be a stud. Well, I did, but I didn't think it was going to be a first round pick, but I thought it was going to be pretty good.
Not to pat myself on the back or anything.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I did. Charlie Weiss had some very negative feelings towards me because I hammered him pretty good for that back then. But anyway, so I like those offensive line classes, and it's a good group, Ryan. It's a really good group.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to some more questions here. Go Irish says, how much does the future quarterback recruit look at the future offensive line?
Smart ones do. That's all I have to say. I mean, we talk about the wide receivers they're throwing to, the tight ends they're throwing to, obviously, but if you're a good quarterback, you are going to be concerned with what's in front of you. Absolutely. So yeah, I think if you're worried about, you know, Notre Dame landing a big time recruit in this class, I don't think loading up on good offensive linemen is going to hurt that cause at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get to some more. Zach Martin, just for funsies. Whom from the 2022 and 23 classes do you project, assuming Pendleton, Jagusa, Absher, Freeling sign in 2023, will be the most impactful interior lineman? So that would be last year's class. So we think interior, we think Ty Chan, Ashton Craig, Joey Tonona, Billy Shrouth. This year's class of that group, it would be Pendleton. Let's just say Pendleton, and you can choose one of Jagusa or Absher to move inside.
I would pick Jagusa. I've talked about this pretty extensively. Like, I've come to meet you halfway to the fact that I think he could play offensive tackle and he could be a good player at right tackle potentially. But I think he's a star inside potentially. Yeah. Like, I think that his upside is just through the roof. So I think Billy Shrouth can also be a really good player inside, whether it's guard or center even potentially. But I'm in on Jagusa being a dominant guard inside.
I've never took your thoughts on Jagusa to be as much about him not being able to play tackle,
right?
As much as this, as you think, it's like comments I've made about Blake Fisher. It's I've never thought, gee, you got to move Blake Fisher inside the guard because he can't play tackle. Blake Fisher can be a first round draft pick at tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I just think Blake Fisher could be. It's funny we keep talking about these generational interior linemen for Notre Dame, but he could. I mean, that's the kind of talent that he has. But I didn't see anything from any other tackles in the blue gold game that would make me think any of them are anywhere close to forcing the conversation of moving Blake Fisher to tackle. Like, that's the thing, is that guy would have to be like a stud.
No.
And I just don't see it.
I did like, because I know we haven't talked too much, me and you together, about the blue gold game. I did think that Tosh Baker had some good moments, but to your point, it's not good enough to unseat him.
Yeah. Still too inconsistent for a kid that's in his third year.
Exactly.
You know, that's the issue that I have with him is there, he's not playing with enough power. He just, you know, again, a lot could change, but I haven't seen anything that's going to make me say, hey boy, you gotta get this field. Kid. Yeah, yeah. You gotta get this kid on there. You know, and we'll talk more about it this week, but you know, like I thought Rocco played better than Tosh did. And so fair. The whole conversation would be getting your best five. The only reason you would move Blake is if Tosh is clearly one of your best five, and you can't make that case right now, in my opinion. You know, based on what we've seen. Now, I've heard some really good things about how Tosh ended the spring, but I didn't see that. I can only go off of what I've seen.
That's fair.
And so he looked better than he did, but he still will get high, and guys will get up under his chest and drive him into the quarterback, which we saw on Saturday. And you know, those. So he's a ways away, in my opinion, but it's more about that. For me, if we're going to go with the premise that Jagusa's going to be an interior guy, I'll accept your premise just for the conversation. Then he would be my number one, and I'd still have Shrouth my number two.
It's fair.
I'm very high on Billy Shrouth. And again, we can only go off of what they did in high school because we haven't seen any of them Notre Dame uniform yet. Now, hopefully he's healthy. That's going to be a big key for Billy Shrouth panning out is him being healthy. But just based on the prospect he was excellent.
Do you prefer, sorry, going off a little bit of tangent, but Shrouth, do you like him most at guard or do you think he's a center maybe long-term?
Cause I don't care.
No, you don't care. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm a believer, Ryan, get your best five out there. And if the fastest way to get him on the field is to move him to center, then move him to center. If the fastest way to get him, if you recruit a kid to play center and the fastest way, and he's one of your best five, but the best way to get him on the field is to move him to guard, then move him to guard.
Fair.
Yeah. Right. Like I really don't get into that. As long as the guy can play the both positions at the same level.
Fair.
Like if getting him to center gets him on the field, but he's not a good center, then you don't have your best five on there. Cause can you be the best five at the positions that you're being asked to play? Right. Like if your five best, and this is a crazy example just to prove a point, but if your five best players are centers and none of them can play tackle, then they're not your best five. Right. As far as putting a line together, they may be your five most talented guys, but they're pigeonholed into a specific position. You can't move them out there and they're going to play at the same level. Right. Like I wouldn't put Blake Fisher to center. That's not a position. I don't know if he would fit as well there as he does at guard. Right. So I mean, like that wouldn't make a lot of sense to me. With Billy, I think he could play a center or a guard. And I thought he looked good in the Army game at center. His snap to step and snap to punch was really quick and natural. So I like that. But I also know they like Ashton Craig at center and Joey Tonona could maybe get a look at center if he can be healthy. So but I really don't care. Whatever gets him up the two deep the fastest when he gets back from being healthy is all I really care about. So I'd like to see them kind of think ahead. And Harry was good at this when he was at Notre Dame last time, but think ahead to where you see him, you know, even if he's not in your two deep now, but where, as you look forward, do you think he's going to have the best chance to compete and put him there now? If that's center, then put him at center. If it's guard, put him at guard. This is a good one. John Platt, I think I want to answer this. John Platt says, can anyone give me a brief explanation of how recruiting rankings are figured? John, they vary from service to service, but generally speaking, there's a point system that recruits are given based on basically where they're ranked. Rivals, it's a combination of are you a 6.1, 6.0, 5.9, 5.8, and so forth, and each of those are allotted a point. And then based on where you're ranked, you're also allotted another point. If you're not ranked in the top 250, you don't get the second point total. You just get whatever you are for being a 5.8 or a 5.7 or a 5.6, whatever the case may be. And then, you know, so like if you look at Sam Pendleton, he's going to get a certain points. I think it's like 75, I forget what it is, but a certain points for being a 5.8 four-star. And then he's going to get another set of points. I think it's like 5 points for being ranked number 238. And that's his number. And then it's, you combine them all together. And I also believe Rivals only takes the 20 highest ranked guys is how they figure it in, which I don't love that. I don't see why five guys shouldn't count. And if you're going to do that, then make your rankings based off the maximum of what's supposedly allowed by the NCAA, make it 25. Who's your 25 best recruits? Because, well, one class is bigger than another. Well, that should matter when you're talking about, if I got 25 and you got 16, your 16 may be good, but you can't field a football team with 16 dudes, right? Unless you're going to be having dudes playing both ways. I can put a, you know, in theory, put a team on the field. So I think that stuff should matter. It's a different point systems are determined by others differently, but it's all based on a point system. The only one that doesn't go off of a point system, as far as I can tell, is ESPN and SI99. I know how SI99's works and I like it. I don't know how ESPN does theirs, because they don't really have really a method to their madness, as far as I can tell. SI99 is more subjective. You know, we look at, okay, did, you know, the talent that you landed, we look at, did you meet your needs? Are you heavy at certain positions and not others? Is there depth to the class? Like all those things, you know, how does the players fit the team that they're going to? Like if you sign a, you know, if you sign Jimmy Clausen, but you're running the triple option, then sorry, I don't really care that you signed Jimmy Clausen, right? Because he's not going to be very good in your offense. So I think that's part of the fit as well. It's more subjective. I like that personally better. I think there's inherent flaws with a points-based system, but it is good from a perception standpoint, which is why we talk about it. It matters from a perception standpoint. I don't think it matters a ton from, you know, rankings don't determine, don't project, they don't determine your future. They're just tools to try to gauge a player's ability. Anything you'd like to add to that, Ryan?
I just love that you had to mention triple option, man. Always comes back to the triple option.
I'm trying to make a point. It's the most dramatic a point I could think of. Jimmy Clausen running the triple. Now, that's a visual that's going to hit home for you now, isn't it, Ryan?
He's going to pitch it every single time, or he's going to give it.
He's going to audible is what he's going to do. He's going to audible. Well, let's audible to shotgun real quick.
Empty. We don't have that empty, empty.
That's why we're making it up now. You didn't recruit me to run the option.
That's awesome.
What Ron Paula should have done with Lou Holtz. Colin McCann says, you think if Pendleton commits, this is obviously was put up before the announcement, but we're going to still answer the question. So we'll update Colin's question a little bit. Since now that Pendleton commits, do you think any other offensive linemen will follow?
I mean, I don't think that they're following just because Pendleton committed. Like, I don't think he's opening the floodgates, but I will say, Colin, I do expect some offensive linemen to come off the board here pretty soon. Yeah, I do.
I think if it was because of him, it wouldn't be because of him directly. Like, okay, Pendleton's there. I got to go there now.
Right.
But I do think we get a situation where they said, hey, guys, here's our numbers, and one of those spots is now gone. So you can take your recruitment as long as you want, but just understand this is what we're doing. Right. And you can say that, but, you know, that's not necessarily what you may do with some guys, but you still say it to a degree. But, yeah, I think that could happen. But I think that'll normally happen in a class where you've told guys you're going to take at least four. That pressure doesn't really start till you get two in the class. Then you start saying, like, oh, okay, they got two dudes now. I should probably maybe – I want to be there. What's more important to you, picking the school you want or going through the recruiting process, right?
Right.
So that's the decision you have to make. And when you don't have anybody on the board, then that doesn't work at all. Let's see here. We got Brian and Ryan. To you guys, what's the difference between evaluating film and evaluating in person? This is a good one.
Body typing for me, and this comes from the NFL draft kind of circuit stuff. Like we mentioned it a little bit on Brian mentioned a little bit that like you can't really tell the body type a little bit of Pendleton to the highest degree. That's why NFL scouts always go on game visits. They want to see the body type in person. They want to kind of project how much a player can hold, what's a good weight for a player to eventually develop into. So for me, it's body typing is the biggest thing for an in-person rather than just kind of evaluating film. And the other thing is, like, I also just like, and it's more important for some positions than others, not as much offensive line driven. But it is, I'd like to see how guys interact with their teammates, right? Like, I want to see what the leadership qualities are. I want to see if they're have good, you know, good, a good kind of upbeat type of to them on the sidelines and just have all those personalities. But like the number one for me is body typing. You can tell so much more about how a player looks in person and how he can potentially develop from a physical perspective.
I think what's the first thing that we said when we broke down our film tonight? He's listed as 6'4", 305, but he doesn't look that to me. If right. I'm there at the stadium and if I'm down in the field and he can walk past me, I can say, okay, I can size him up. All right. I can see him now. I think there are other things that you can't tell on film. For example, like let's take a running back. You're just watching even game film. It's going to stop and start at some point in time. To Ryan's point, but if you see this kid and he's getting in his lineman's face and he's complaining to them and he's whining about this and he's showing up as quarterback every time the ball's not like, is this guy going to be a great teammate? You know, I think the other thing, the big thing for me is there's a difference between what we do and what NFL teams and colleges do, because at the end of the day, I'm not investing a scholarship into a guy that I evaluate. I'm not investing, what is it? I mean, now it's well over $250,000 into that, just scholarship alone. I'm not investing a first round contract into that guy. Right. So I don't need to drive to his town and interview his principal and his teachers and all this other kind of stuff to find out what kind of young man he is. But that
background
matters.
Checks. Yeah, background checks.
That matters if I'm Notre Dame and I have to offer this kid a scholarship, right? And if we had the resources, I wouldn't mind doing that stuff. And we try to do that from talking to people who have done it, right? That's part of that intangibles grade. But it doesn't carry as much weight because it doesn't require a decision to be made. We can just say his talent is this. And make our decisions off of that. So I think that's the big thing. And I think obviously the size thing also, Ryan, fits into, you can also evaluate what he's going against a little bit better too. I think we have got into this weird thing now. And I think it comes from the scouting departments, scouting services, recruiting services. I think it comes from another way to pimp their camps. This whole, well, you gotta see a guy in person. How did these coaches recruit for decades without being able to go out and see all these kids in person at a camp? Right. Like at the end of the day, being obsessed with that is how you can talk yourself out of Kyle Hamilton being a top 10 player. Right. And talk other guys into being top 10 players that shouldn't be top 10 players. At the end of the day, the film is still the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes we're in this weird thing, and I don't know if it's like a tribalism or it's a way for recruiting services to kind of put themselves above the peasants that watch YouTube games or whatever else. Like, well, you didn't see him in person, so you don't have an opinion. Shut up. You know what I mean? Like, you can see the guy in person. If you can't evaluate, I don't care how many camps you go to, right? Rivals director or whatever the case may be. It's not the Rivals director anymore, I guess now. But that's kind of my thing is if you the film is the film, right? Yep. But there are, when you're talking about the scholarship or investing when I was coaching, I would go to as many games as I could in the fall, right? I mean, just because like I said, there are things you want to see. How does a kid handle adversity in the middle of a game? I want to see a quarterback throw a pick and on film after the pick's over, the plays, I see nothing else. I'm not watching anything else between now and the next play, except I'm watching him interact with his coaches. I'm watching him, if he's throwing his helmet down and getting in a receiver's face and acting like a big baby, that's going to tell me a little something about him. Now, if he goes and gets in a receiver's face and he's telling him what he should have done differently, that's different.
Yep.
Right. That's like, hey, this guy, but if you're showing a guy up or you're acting like you're pouting and you're not wanting to hear from you storm away from the coach, you'll see that, right? I mean, you'll go see this kid. Like, this kid's got a great arm. And you go watch a play and like, this kid's a freaking jerk. I don't want this kid, right? Like, you can tell his teammates don't react to him.
They didn't go to his birthday party. Like, all that stuff. I watched draft day today, by the way. Yes, I did.
Somebody just said that.
Bo Callahan,
I gotta watch that this week. I always watch it the week of the draft.
Oh, you have to, man. I have to. That's really that's
just sitting there eating my pancakes, thinking about number one. I'm like, what is this guy chewing on this pancakes for? Like, why is this part of the scene? Oh, yeah. Great. And what's the thing about him ripping his eyebrows out at the end, like when he got mad? Like, that was such a that guy's character was kind of weird.
My favorite part of that movie. I'm sorry to we're going off on a tangent here, but do you remember when he walks past it's where they're like lifting weights and stuff in like the weight room, and I guess he was the strength coach is like, hey man, have you seen Brian Drew lately? Have you seen him? He's like, oh man. He's like, oh, you know what's even better? His arm throwing the ball a good 15 yards further.
Yeah, that happens to a guy that's been in the NFL for 6 years. Sure. Okay. Did you check him for steroids?
I love that. That movie is so corny, but I love it.
I love the movie, but there's so much. You're like, oh, that's cringe. It's so cringe, but I still enjoy the movie. Especially the last scene.
I think they named the strength coach Tony Bagel too, which is awesome.
Don't listen to coach. Like, what do you mean? Don't listen to coach. Coach is the one that's got his back. Like, what are you talking about? Don't listen to coach. Compete with him. Like, what are you talking? It was so lame. But I love it. I still love the movie. I do. I'm not gonna lie to you. I do. And I'll be honest with you, I've met some NFL scouts, and some of them are great. But some of them are like those dudes that are like, you know, like, you know, they're idiots. It's like any profession. You're going to get dumb morons and people that are bad at their jobs in any profession. There's no doubt about it. Let's get to some more here before we get out of here. We actually answered that one. Oh, here we go. Brian and Ryan, will we see a fullback this fall? Yes. Won't be on scholarship.
Charlie Davis, Weiss, Davis last, Sherwood. Is that Davis
yeah.
Sherwood?
Yeah, yeah. They got a couple of them. Charlie yeah. Weiss's last belt loop off topic and Pemba status. Charlie, we talked about that earlier. Notre Dame is still very much a player for him. We're both a little hesitant to jump completely on board to Notre Dame, but he still has a lot of visits planned. It sounds like this is going to go on for a while, but they're still in the game. No doubt about it. Nothing personal. What is up with LSU stealing the gold throne idea?
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery, man. That's all I got to say about it.
And I do think LSU jacked it a little bit, but Notre Dame didn't invent the gold throne. Colleges have used that before. Notre Dame invented, as far as I know, doing it on gold bricks.
Yes.
That's new. But Oklahoma does that. There are other – Oregon, I think, does that. There are other schools that have, like, a throne for kids. Mm-hmm. LSU's is kind of lame because it's like just this throne in the middle of the room with like nothing around it, which is
very
like
lame, very lame,
very typical Brian Kelly-ish. You're seeing him being reactionary there. I'm just being honest. Like he suddenly starts kind of after all the stuff about Marcus Freeman comes out about alums. All of a sudden you hear Brian Kelly like bringing in all these, you know, it's like he's paying very close attention to what's happening in Notre Dame. There's no question about it. Very close attention to what's happening there, which is why he's being quoted as with comments about Notre Dame. So there's a lot to that. Let's get to this last question from Keith, and we're going to wrap this up. It says, are you guys watching the NFL draft?
Every single second, Keith. Every single second. I mean, I don't work as hard as I do on that side of the coin to not enjoy the fruits of my labor. So, yes, I'll be watching every single second, Thursday through Saturday. Absolutely.
So just a little heads up, everybody, we are going to have an NFL draft podcast on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So our normal afternoon slot will be a draft podcast. Ryan's going to give the latest intel, and you dropped a little something on the board today, Ryan, which had some very interesting nuggets on there. I thought the one about Kevin Austin was especially.
Yep.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So we're going to kind of go over the latest intel that we're hearing, and we're going to do like a little fun mock draft, sort of like a dueling mock draft. We're not going to do it like McShay and Kiper. We're going to both kind of give a pick for what we would do if the mock draft, if we were picking for those teams. And then Ryan will also share kind of what he's hearing, if anything, from those picks. So that'll be a lot of fun. So our Thursday show will be geared towards the NFL draft. And then, of course, like Friday and Saturday, we'll have some wrap-up stuff in regards to breaking down just different guys and, you know, who went where and stuff like that. So definitely stay locked in, which is why, Ryan, mm-hmm. people need to make sure that they are hitting the notification bell, because when we're going to do a show like, you know, 6:30 at night, because a kid's going to commit, you get notified that the show is going to happen. And so that's why you need to hit the like button, hit subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, sign up for the message boards, buy merch from the merch store, Built Bars, all of it, just engage in all of it. We got so much stuff going on Irish Breakdown. Ryan's going to have more updates. I'm getting ready to publish my class impact, because we've been doing the show. So I've been able to publish my class impact on Sam Pendleton. I'll have that up here very soon as well. And stay locked into what we're doing. But Ryan, thanks for joining us. Thanks to everybody for joining the show tonight. It was a lot of fun. We actually had a super chat pop up here real quickly. I want to get to with you, Chess. Super chat. What is the possibility of a guy like Jagusa get spurred to action by seeing available spots fill up?
I mean, yeah. I mean, if he's all set on Notre Dame and he starts to, you know, he's trying to like let the process play out, and you see spots filled up, I mean, there's going to be a point in your mind where you're kind of like, huh, there's probably limited space there. So I think it does have some validity to it for sure.
Yeah, I could see it. I think it all depends on whether or not you made the point, whether or not a guy is locked in to there and just wants to experience the process. But I still think it would take more than one or two for that to happen. Got another super chat popped up. We'll always extend the shows if you guys want to throw more super chats at us. I'm just saying. Yep. Says, Brian, are you nervous that the player you thought would commit this past weekend didn't commit? No, I'm not. And I'm not – I obviously can't get too much into it, but I'm not. I think it's just a timing thing. It's nothing that I'm worried about yet. So no, I'm not. We did think a kid was going to commit this weekend. I could pretend that, we always knew it was be Brandon Davis Wayne. That's not who we thought it was going to be. We thought it was going to be a 2023 player. From everything we've heard, he's in great shape. Everything's good to go. It's just a timing thing. So hopefully we'll find out more what's going on.
It's not cold feet. It's the timing issue. Right. I just want to put that out there.
Right.
Yep.
As of right now, as we always say, if things change, we'll let you know. Promise. If things change, we'll let you know. But thank you for that super chat. And I forgot again, how do you pronounce that, your screen name? I always forget this. I always think I remember we had this discussion before and you told us what it was, but I can't remember. I can't remember what it was. So, yeah. And then as far as the thing about the commit, it's not on the board. We didn't talk about it because we haven't said who it is. And so if we talk too much about why it didn't happen, then it makes it kind of obvious who it is. So we're not going to do that. But as of right now, like you said, we're not concerned about it right now. Mace, AKA, let manager. Okay. I'm going to remember that one once. So now it's just the abbreviation for that. So thank you so much for that. Mace, AKA, follow his advice, everybody. Join the message board. Smash that like button. Subscribe to the show. Hit the notification bell. Share the podcast. Leave a 5-star review if you're listening via one of the podcast apps. And of course, as always, go Irish. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of the second edition of today's Irish Breakdown podcast. We'll see you again tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.